TLA Cinema. And with me is Scott B., who with his wife Beth B. are among the leading new wave, low-budget New York independent filmmakers. They've adopted the letter B as their last name as an homage to B-Movies. They've named their production company B-Movies. The B's movies first developed a following when they were shown in New Wave clubs in New York. Their 8mm films include G-Man, Black Box, Letters to Dad, The Offenders, and Trap Door. Many of their films create an atmosphere of menace and political paranoia. Their latest, Vortex, opens today at the TLA. Vortex is a New Wave subversion of the detective genre. Punk singer Lydia Lunch stars as the sullen detective Angel Powers. The villain and target of her investigation is a multinational corporation which is trying to destroy its competition for a major Defense Department contract for the development of outer space laser weapons. Beth B. and Scott B. each have small roles in the film. Vortex is the B's first 16mm film. It will be shown today and tomorrow at the TLA on 3rd and South Streets in Philadelphia. Scott B. will introduce the 8 and 10 o'clock shows tonight at the TLA and will be in the side lobby during the shows. Scott B., welcome back to Fresh Air.
Hi, thanks.
And let me ask you to explain how you went about choosing B. as your last name.
Well, we both had very long, complicated last names and wanted, rather than her taking my name or when we got married or vice versa, we decided on a short one that was easy to remember and not as pretentious as A. And B movies is kind of like, we've both grown up actually watching a lot of television, so it was like the staple, you know, information that we had was like late night movies and B movies in general.
What doesn't work about a long name when you're a filmmaker?
Well, it's just long names are a pain to write, actually. So it's not a matter of being a filmmaker or anything else. And it was also something at the time when we started making films, we were showing them in rock and roll clubs, as you said. And it was kind of like just to emphasize the fact that we were doing something that was new and different. Like a performers would take on new names, like James Chance or Lydia Lunch or whatever. We took a new name in the same sort of a way, just to kind of like emphasize that we were breaking away from what had been going on before.
Are there specific conventions that you wanted to break away from?
Well, at that time we were both coming out of art, kind of an art background. We'd both been artists and doing some video and performance work. And we were breaking out of that kind of a context, the art context, where it was more geared towards a kind of elite audience or a select sort of an audience, and using a language, a structural language that very few people could understand. We wanted an immediate sort of reaction, the kind of like where people would scream back at the screen, and people were smoking and drinking and sort of relaxed and more of a rock and roll sort of a situation. And we liked that context. We liked the idea that people would deal with the issues that we had that we were dealing with immediately and kind of like slapping them in the face, and they had the opportunity to yell back at us if they wanted to.
The atmosphere you're describing sounds similar to the atmosphere at some midnight screenings in movie theaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we love that 42nd Street sort of atmosphere. But originally we were showing in rock and roll clubs like Max's or that sort of place, so that people were actually drinking and smoking, and it was kind of crazy. So our first films had to have a kind of a visceral sort of power, you know, just a physical power to maintain control in that sort of a situation, so that people would actually hold on to, you know, what was happening on the screen. So Black Box in particular, and Letters to Dad, both use a very, very strong musical soundtrack, which is carried over to an extent in Vortex as well. We're always focused very intensely on sound and the quality of it, and music in particular in film.
Your new film, Vortex, is a new wave-styled detective movie. Why did you want to do something in the detective genre?
Well, detectives are, in a sense, it's an easy way to introduce people into a lot of different information. And our original intent with making the film was to kind of like explore the idea of large corporations and explore what large corporations are involved with, like some of the brain behavior modification techniques, like implanting electrodes in brains, and the way that a corporation will do multifaceted things, from manufacturing surveillance devices to defense contracts to paying off congressmen to, you know, the whole gamut of the nasty things that corporations do. And this and using a detective allows you to have somebody who can kind of like take the audience by the hand and walk them through. And particularly because we didn't want to have used the kind of a Hollywood system where you identify with the character, and so they'll grab you emotionally and carry you through the film, and you have to hold on to them that way. Because it was a kind of a set genre that everyone understands the kind of the way that genre works, we could hold the audience to all this information using a detective.
Why don't you want someone to enjoy the film because they're identifying with the main character?
Well, with this, I think my new film, Beth and I are working separately on our next ones, and my new film, I'm going to use that as a technique, more of like a Hitchcock sort of a situation. But within this film, we were more interested in ideas and more interested in kind of bringing across information rather than creating a false illusion of something else happening on the screen. We were very influenced by Brecht and by that kind of distancing theater, where it's more of like the style or the show of what's going on as the entertainment value, instead of having this kind of an emotional wrapping people up so that they are so emotionally involved that they don't recognize the information or recognize what you're trying to say.
The leading character is, the detective anyways, the point of view is Lydia Lunch, mm-hmm. who's a new wave performer in New York. What did you choose her for the role, and how did you describe the role to her when she agreed to take it?
Well, Lydia we've worked with before on some of our other films, and she was, in a sense, we used her because we see her as a kind of like a model of a new kind of female. You know, the kind of toughness and the kind of self-reliance that she has is something that, you know, it's definitely a contrast to anything that you're going to see coming out of Hollywood, at least as a leading role. And also, we felt comfortable with the way, you know, her kind of snottiness. It attracted us to, you know, in a sense, we used the humor and her kind of like totally off the wall attitude towards everything as something that people can kind of like chuckle along. So she's constantly pushing you away and yet saying come here at the same time. So it fit within our idea of how to handle the narrative with that. And what was the second half of your question? It was
how you described the role to her.
Oh, originally actually we described it to her thinking that she would appreciate this, that we thought of her as the 1980s Mae West. And, of course, she couldn't stand that idea, thinking, of course, that she's much more beautiful than Mae West ever could be. But, you know, some of that is still in there. The character's got that same sort of tongue-in-cheek sort of an attitude.
And the second time you described it to her?
Well, just the kind of the tough gumshoe, you know. Actually, we had written the role for her in the first place, and it's kind of it was near disaster, because 3 days before we started shooting, she went into the hospital in Los Angeles. And so we had to rearrange the entire shooting schedule as we tried to look for someone else to play the part. Fortunately, 2 weeks later, she was feeling better and was well enough to come out to New York to do it. But it was very, very close. But essentially, we had her playing herself. In most ways, and perhaps that's why she didn't like the Mae West idea, was because, you know, she saw it as playing herself, and she would, you know, instead of playing a character, you know, she was like essentially putting her own character in that situation.
Well, to give our listeners a sense of what Lydia Lunch's persona is like, I thought we could listen to a selection from her 1980 album Queen of Siam. And this is a piece called Lady Scarface. And if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Scott B., who is the co-director, co-writer, co-producer with Beth B. of the film Vortex, a new wave detective film that opens today at the TLA on South Street. And the detective is played by Lydia Lunch.
And A, if you're gonna be there, don't be late. without a soft touch. If it would have mattered, it didn't too much. I waited for you a minute or two. But just what kind of a girl do you think I am? Fumbling around a cigarette, smoked it to the ash and then lit up again. Blowing smoke rings, blind in the air. If you're coming, baby, you're just too in arrears. I'm too impatient and you're just too late. My attention span is just not that great. Then this young kind of guy walked right on by me. I couldn't bend more than 16. There's just nothing I can do, you gotta understand. You see, he had this walk, I mean down pat. And no, he wasn't going in my direction, so I just kind of turned around. I had to, I was really possessed. I mean, I wasn't myself. I was so close, I crept like a cat. Visions of seduction lurking under my hat. He was so young, such innocence. If I had control, I didn't feel any yet. I couldn't be heard, not a sound did I make. If this is the real thing, there's just no need to fake. So now was the time, the crucial eighth mile. If I had to do it, it'd be with a smile. A tap on his back, a slip of my belt. He turned around and I knew that the ground would melt. I put on the ice, the smile was gone. Hey baby, younger.
Lydia Lunch performing Lady Scarface from her album Queen of Siam. And my guest is Scott B., who is the co-director, co-producer, co-writer of the film Vortex, which stars Lydia Lunch and has just opened at the TLA on South Street for only a two-day run, today and tomorrow. And you were telling me as we were listening to that, Scott, that the arranger of the piece that we just heard was the same person who arranged the Flintstones theme.
Yeah.
Very inspired.
It was amazing, actually, when she was still working with Teenage Jesus and the Jerks when she had the idea to do this. And I remember the time when we were up in the back room trying to get paid for, we'd shown Black Box at the same time with her, and she was telling somebody that she had the arranger for the Flintstones on her next album, right? And she was, and I just remember the reaction. They were all thinking, oh my God, Dave, you can't have a punk, huh? Right. Like, that was a big issue at that point. I mean, to be real punk or not. I mean, it was outrageous.
Yeah, I really wonder what the person who arranged it made of made of all this.
Money.
Money, right. Okay. Speaking of money, do you wish you had a bigger budget to work with on your films?
Oh, I wish I had enough to pay myself and pay the people I was working with. My next film, I will. That's not, I think, things are... Change. I mean, I would love to have enough money to pay everyone what they're worth too. I'd love to have, but I don't think that it would really change the kinds of subjects that I'm working with, or that it's going to change the kinds of people I work with.
Do you think you'd feel if you had access to more money, like you had to have a more refined looking movie? Because sometimes
certainly. I'd love to have a much
would
more
you?
Refined, sure.
Uh-huh.
And, I think Vortex, too, is much... I mean, the difference between Vortex and the Super 8 films is substantial already. I would love to make a film that's so seamless that people aren't even aware that they're watching a film.
What would you do differently if you had a lot more money?
Well, for one thing, I'd just have a lot... the pace would be a lot faster. I mean, the Vortex, it works. Each film that we've done, I mean... When you have a limited budget, you have to do a film that has the kind of the information that you're dealing with has that kind of a, like a, has an appropriate subject matter. And so, in a sense, you know, just having a larger budget would just give you, give me a chance to work with a subject matter that requires, you know, more money and that's a larger kind of a scale. You know, instead of, like, for instance, Vortex was shot all interiors all at night, and that's, you know, the concept is partly to create a kind of a surveillance atmosphere and to kind of have it, give it a claustrophobic sort of a feeling. But at the same time, that allows us to do it very cheaply because you don't have to have all huge sets and huge technicians, huge numbers of technicians to light it and all of that.
Are you getting any bites from the industry?
Well, we've been talking to people in Los Angeles and a mixed bag of things, and it looks very good.
What kind of movies do you think you'd get offered, or would you just get the funding to do the movies
just
that you want to do?
Just get funding. Both Beth and I are working on separate films, as I said, and we've both written scripts and are now approaching different distributors and private investors to kind of put together a package to fund our next films.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of some of the major motion pictures that have incorporated either new wave music or new wave performers in the movie, or new wave imagery in some way?
Well, I think both Road Warriors and Blade Runner are very interesting films. Road Warriors perhaps more interesting, but Blade Runner is still pretty. I mean, just because the story is suitable to what the way that it's handled, and Blade Runner is absolutely gorgeous film, I think, amazingly put together.
What do you think of Smithereens? Did you get to see it?
Yeah, I liked that. I liked it very much.
What other movies have impressed you recently?
Recently, not too many. Not that are out in release right now, anyway.
Do you try to see a lot of movies?
Mm-hmm. And just got a Betamax, too, so I've been renting a lot of films and looking at other film, you know, some films again for the second time, like North by Northwest, I love. I don't know. My taste in movies has been changing. Were kind of like our inspiration, B movies and such, and Fritz Lang and Sam Fuller and directors of that sort. As you know, I've been more interested recently in actually directors like Coppola or Scorsese or Hitchcock. I've been more interested in actually people who've started to break into, you know, like Scorsese and Coppola both got pretensions to be artists, and which very few B movies directors have until they've till somebody comes along with a retrospective and tells them that. You know,
Did you have a lot of detective genre favorites?
Not in terms of films, really. Besides perhaps Maltese Falcon, things that have been made out of the Dashiell Hammett books, or John Huston, you know, early films, Raoul Walsh, of course, and gangster films I love.
I think that the score for Vortex is really terrific, and I think you've managed to get the kind of sleazy feel of a lot of detective genre movies and TV shows, but with a very new wave sound to it. What did you think about when doing the score?
Actually, when we were cutting the film, we used as a scratch track, which is what that is a piece of music that you just take it from anywhere and you cut it into the film so that you have sort of like a mood. You can set a mood with it. We used the Mancini score for Touch of Evil as that, and plus Queen of Siam, the one, some of the, like this, the Scarface song, we actually used as a piece, just to give us a kind of a mood, sort of a feeling for it. So we, you know, used like the classic sort of classic jazzy sort of gangster era stuff, which was really Mancini. I mean, before that, they didn't have music that came out of a kind of a pop milieu. It was more like standard movie, you know, harking back to the classics more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you enjoy TV and movie music a lot when you were younger and in your formative years?
Not so much. I don't think I really noticed it so much. I was more of a, you know, pop music junkie.
What kind of music?
Oh, everything from Captain Beefheart to Beatles to Jimi Hendrix to Doors, you know, mix of things.
Do you ever get concerned that if you're making major motion picture type releases that you won't be able to be true to your ideals, that you won't be able to make leftist movies or do movies that people in rock and roll clubs will be interested in. No, is that a concern?
No, I'm not concerned. I also I think that the way that the movie industry works is basically on a profit motive and almost exclusively, and I don't think that what material you're working with really has much to do with it. I mean, the more important thing is getting the film out there and dealing with subjects that people want to see.
You've shot a lot of Vortex in your loft, right?
Mm-hmm.
That must have been really hard.
It was hell.
Because you never get to get away from your work.
Oh, it was pretty terrifying, actually, because we were shooting like 14 hours a day and then trying to dig our mattress out from underneath the rubble at night to sleep. So it was I will never do that again. It's like insanity, impossible situation, because we had a huge crew as well. So it was like 15 people in this one room the whole time. No way, and no possible way to get away from it. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and your wife is your co-producer, co-director, co-et cetera on it. Do you think it's going to change your relationship to be working on separate films?
It already has, I think. I think one thing that happened to us working together the way we were was we almost became like one person, which was very interesting, but at the same time kind of made it very difficult. We kind of lost a sense of ourselves in it, which was probably not very good in the long run for either one of us. But at the same time, it was incredibly valuable, and it allowed us to do things that we wouldn't have been able to do on our own, definitely, because we're almost kind of a perfect complement for each other.
In what way?
Well, in that she's very fiery and, like, her very quick on her feet and very emotional, and I'm more kind of analytical, philosophical, and I'll pull back a little bit from it, and it takes me 5 minutes to come up with a proper answer for a good question. Yeah.
What do you like and dislike most about a movie when you're making one? But the process, which part of it is most appealing, and which part do you do because it has to be done but you really hate it?
Well, the most appealing really is just shooting it and actually working with actors and the cutting and music and scripting and storyboarding. All the creative aspects are really appealing. The business drives me nuts. I mean, that's something I would much prefer to have a producer handle.
One of the things that I found really striking about Vortex was the colors. That you use, the lighting and the colors. Do colors signal to you certain emotional or stylish responses?
Well, in a sense, we used it not so much as if each color meant something, but more as, or not as if, I don't think that red means sex or blue means this, or I don't think there's any kind of, we attach those meanings to them, but we use them in the film in a consistent sort of a way so that every time you saw a kind of a greenish fluorescent looking light, you knew that you were inside the corporation. And we would use color in that sort of a way to kind of like cue people into the characters. And we were conceived of the film originally as a black and white film in color, you know, kind of taking off from the detective milieu. And so when we used the color, we used it for a specific purpose within the context of the film.
So can you tell us a little bit what your next film will be about?
Well, my next one is called Playland. I'm writing it with James Russo, who's plays a Demmer character starring in Vortex. And it's dealing with a young man who's worked in an amusement park all his life, and the amusement park is failing. And he ends up robbing the place, and then is chased by these characters who he owes all this money to. So it's kind of his the story of him coming of age in the place, essentially.
Good luck with it.
And thanks.
And good luck with Vortex. What are the plans for the film? It's opened in New York. It will be in Philadelphia for a couple of days. What other distribution is it getting?
Well, it's getting it's opening slowly around the country. We don't have too many prints of it, and it's being distributed in Germany and Italy and, you know, hopefully it will be getting out everywhere. So okay. It's in 16, so it's a little on the tough side. That's why part of the reason why we haven't got a real extended run here, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck with the film, and thanks a lot for talking with us on Fresh Air.
Sure.
I've been speaking with Scott B., who, along with Beth B., co-wrote, co-produced, co-directed the new film Vortex, which is a new wave detective film. It plays today and tomorrow at the TLA on 3rd and South Streets. And Scott B. will be at the 8 and 10 p.m. shows this evening to introduce the movie. And he'll be stationed in the side lobby during the shows if you'd like to speak with him when you attend. We're going to hear another selection from the soundtrack of the film Vortex, which, by the way, features both of the Bees as musicians, and also featured on the soundtrack is John Lurie from the group The Lounge Lizards. Thank you. That was John Lurie on saxophone, and that's a selection from the soundtrack of Vortex, the film which opens today at the TLA on South Street. It's 4:30, this is Fresh Air, and you're tuned to 91FM. In just a minute, we'll hear from Julia Child, the famous chef and television personality. But first, let's get the latest shadow report from John Brown of Shadow Traffic.
Good afternoon, everyone. Traffic's still very heavy in the area of the Schuylkill Expressway as you travel through the detours because of this closure. Eastbound still closed at Girard. Westbound still closed at South because of the accident involving the overturned tanker trailer that exploded at 30th Street. Your heavy volume still remains around the detour areas, not on the Schuylkill Expressway itself. Now, eastbound is a little bit heavy approaching Montgomery due to a separate earlier accident which has just been cleared a few moments ago. Wissahickon Drive northbound is jammed the entire length of the City Avenue Bridge through Gypsy. Earlier accident just cleared there. Still no idea, by the way, when the Schuylkill Expressway is going to be reopened. That's shadow traffic for WHYY 91FM. This is John Brown.
And we'll have another shadow traffic report in about 25 minutes before joining National Public Radio for All Things Considered. 4:31 is the time. This is Fresh Air, and you're tuned to WHYY FM in Philadelphia. In the last 20 years, American cooking has undergone a tremendous change from steak and potatoes to a sophisticated repertoire of continental recipes. The one person most credited with this transformation is Julia Child, whose booming voice and 6'2" frame have introduced thousands of cooks to the complexities of French cuisine. She was introduced to French cooking in 1946 when her husband Paul was assigned to the French embassy. After studying at the famous cooking school Cordon Bleu, she co-founded a cooking school of her own called L'École des Trois Gourmands, and that was in Paris in 1951. With her two partners, Simone Beck and Louisette Bertol, she wrote Mastering the Art of French Cooking. It was published in 1961, and this two-volume book has just been re-released by Knopf Publishers. In 1963, she began her long-running television cooking show, The French Chef, on public television. In 1965, she received a Peabody Award for Distinguished Achievement in Television. Then in 1966, she won an Emmy. Julia Child has published half a dozen cookbooks, and her television series has reappeared in a number of forms. The newest is Dinner at Julia's, a series of 13 shows built around dinner parties hosted by Julia Child. It begins this Monday at 8 p.m. on Channel 12 in the Delaware Valley. I spoke with Julia Child earlier this week when she visited Philadelphia. I asked her first for a capsulized food autobiography, what food was prepared in her family when she was young.
I grew up in a comfortable middle-class family, and that was heavens in the teens, and at that time there was plenty of help. So we always had a cook and even an upstairs maid. And my mother cooked on Thursdays, and she could cook not very much. She could do biscuits and some kind of a cheese dish. So I didn't have any background of cooking, though I always enjoyed eating. My grandmother, who came from Illinois, was a great cook. She made donuts and crullers and all kinds of things. It was good, plain food, though.
A lot of girls learn how to cook by being in the kitchen with their mothers. Since you had a cook in the house, did you hang out